Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, March 18th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about some of the best movies from the 2024 edition of the South by Southwest Film Festival. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined in this first part of the episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, how was your South by this year? Before we get into the actual movies that we're going to talk about today, I was just wondering what the vibe was like and how you would compare this edition of the festival to previous ones that you've attended.
I had a bit of an interesting experience this year because I spent a lot more time. I spent less time watching movies I was planning to review, and I spent a lot of time at like panels and Q&As and stuff like that. And I do some of that. I've done some of that previous years, but this year that was a heavy focus for me. So it was definitely a bit of a different vibe because I was, you know, more time sort of watching people talk about the movies at the festival and things like that. And so I didn't see like 20 movies, you know, I saw like 10 or 11, you know, so mm-hmm. that was different for me in that sense, but it was also really cool. I learned that Sydney Sweeney's way more famous than any of us think she is. Like, we know she's famous, but like, she's like super famous. Like, it's like crazy how famous she is.
Just by the attendance of that panel, is that what you mean?
Yeah, because so normally at a lot of these conventions or Comic Cons or whatever, what'll happen is you'll have, if there's a panel, they will clear the room between panels. So what happened to this panel I went to, she was just doing like a talk about her career, and they didn't clear the room between panels, and almost nobody left. So you're talking people sat there for hours just waiting to like get, and then there was two different lines. There's an express pass line and a regular line. And though both of those lines were completely full in the convention center, and people were like, once they realized they weren't going to have a chance at getting in, there was just a lot of like irritated grumbling, and nobody left either. They were just going to wait and hope that they got in anyway, even though there was no chance of that happening. Wow. So it was pretty fascinating to sort of understand like, oh wow, her star power is just through the roof right now. So that was kind of interesting.
Okay, so we actually have a ton of coverage up at South by Southwest. There's like a bunch of articles that you wrote, Ryan, about those panels that you were talking about. And like you wrote pieces based on some movies that we're going to talk about here in a second. You also have at least one review up on the site as well. So the scope of the South by Southwest coverage at Slash Film is much bigger than the movies that we're just going to talk about on today's episode of the podcast. So I encourage people to go to slashfilm.com and check all that out. But we have three movies that we want to talk about here in this first section. Why don't you kick things off by telling me about Sasquatch Sunset?
Yes. So I had a rare festival treat this year where, I mean, Ben, you're very familiar. You've done lots of festivals in the past. You know, the hit ratio, because you don't really know what you're getting yourself into, right? Like, so usually you see a couple stinkers in there, whatever. I saw 11 movies this year. Not a single one of them was, like, bad. But if any of them sank to the level of, I don't think I'm ever going to watch this again, it is Sasquatch Sunset.
okay.
No, but that's not necessarily saying it's bad. It is a movie by the Zellner brothers, and it is all I could think to say about it in the immediate aftermath is that it is exceptionally weird. And I've gone so far now as to say that of any relatively mainstream movie, and what I mean by that is it is being distributed by Bleecker Street, which is a studio people have heard of, and it has people you've heard of in it, such as Riley Keough and Jesse Eisenberg. Any movie that rises to that level, I think this is the weirdest movie I've ever seen. There are weirder movies, but I don't know that they have A-list stars in them or that they are coming from a studio that people have heard of. It is right. so deeply weird, and it is hard not to at least respect it a little bit. And there's a lot of good craft on display. Everyone in the movie is in these Sasquatch costumes, and they're genuinely incredible. Like, practical makeup effects and the photography is gorgeous. It all takes place in like the American Pacific Northwest, but yeah, I don't want to spoil it for people that are going to see it, but we talk about it a little bit, but I guess, and it's not meant to be a challenge. It's not necessarily meant to off put people either, but when I tell you it's weird, I really mean it. Like, I can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, I think it's fair to just talk about what's in the trailer, right? Which is like what we see is it appears to be a largely silent, if not fully silent movie about a family of Sasquatches.
Yeah, I think Sasquatch is plural, but yeah, it is it is a year in the life of a family of Sasquatch. And yeah, it is, to say silent wouldn't be fair. I can say they do communicate, but it is not in English, and there are no subtitles. So like, it is and there are no, I'll just say this, there are no humans in the movie. You don't get to a point where suddenly it's like Harry and the Hendersons or something. Like, it doesn't get there. It is straight up that movie. Like, it is, and I think at one point I also described it jokingly as like a Disney nature movie gone horribly wrong. like it's definitely very R-rated. Like, it's very, like, it's very gross at times. It's very, like, explicitly sexual at times. It gets very dark at times. I don't know. It's a movie that I'm never going to watch again, but I'm going to think about a lot. Like, it's one of those things. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, the other thing I've said about it is that, like, I think that the target audience for this feels so small to me. And even within that target audience, I think you're going to have, like, the people that hate it, but then the people that love this movie are going to love this movie a lot. So it'll be one that gets talked about, and it's an interesting one for sure.
Okay, so that's Sasquatch Sunset. Bleecker Street is releasing it like sometime this year. I think it's like coming to theaters like relatively soon.
I think,
right?
Next month, if I'm not mistaken, it's select cities on April 12th and nationwide April 19th.
Okay, all right. So just about a month for people to be able to check that one out, if you dare, it sounds like. So what sounds to me, Ryan, like on the complete opposite end of the spectrum is a movie called The Idea of You, which has been getting a lot of buzz going into the festival. This is one that like people have been following the development of this project for a while. It's basically the very brief premise. I've not seen it yet, obviously, but you have, and I'm excited to hear what you think about it. The brief premise is that Anne Hathaway basically falls in love with like a Harry Styles-esque pop star figure. And this, I believe, is based on a really popular book. So you saw this movie, and what did you think about this one?
I knew very little about it. I knew the basic premise of, you know, Anne Hathaway, slightly older woman, like 40-year-old woman, falls in love with a 20-something pop star. I like rom-coms. I love Anne Hathaway. So I was like, okay, Michael Showalter directed it, who you might know from The Big Sick, The Lovebirds. He also wrote, I believe he wrote Wet Hot American Summer back in the day. This was my biggest surprise of the year so far. I expected I would like this movie just fine. I loved this movie. It's so, so, so good. I am a little afraid of being overzealous about this, but luckily it seems like the other reactions have been very positive. So I feel confident in my hyping this movie up. It is a huge reminder that Anne Hathaway has a well-deserved Oscar on her mantle, and she gives everything to this movie. It floored me with how much I loved it. And it was sort of in the way that, I don't know how you feel about this movie, but Silver Linings Playbook is technically a rom-com, but it's one of those movies that rises above what that genre can sort of, represent, where your average rom-com can kind of be just a disposable popcorn movie. But when done right, it is a lot more than that. And this is a lot more than that.
Interesting.
I honestly can't say enough good things about it. And the idea, the premise sounds ridiculous. I'm aware of that. And that's my thing, is I'm aware, this premise could go off the rails 40 different ways. But it becomes a sincere romance story. And it is I don't know. It's a couple of tremendous performances at the center of this. I was straight up crying at the end. It's very, very good. So okay. I want to make sure I put this on people. My only real complaint here is that, this is a Prime Video joint and it's going to go straight to Prime Video and it's not going to theaters. And I think that this could have been an Anyone But You type movie where it broke out. I that's my only regret, but you will be able to see this. So I believe it's May 2nd. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I just want to make it clear that this is not just some kissing booth type rom-com. Nothing against that, by the way, but it's above that level.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm excited to see this. So I actually don't really want to grill you much on it, because I don't want you to spoil anything or sure. Really tell me too much about it. But I think if the goal is to get this on people's radar, maybe if they haven't been following the development of it or haven't seen the trailer or anything yet, then I think we've accomplished that goal, especially with how high you've been praising it already. I'm really thrilled that you love it as much as you do, because that bodes well for it, certainly.
Yeah, or even if you're the type that you wouldn't go for the average rom-com, right? I just have to emphasize, this is not the average rom-com. It is very funny when it's supposed to be funny, but it is really truly romantic and heartbreaking and beautiful when it's supposed to be as well. It is a real movie. And I guess that, so yeah, just please put this on your radar.
Okay, that's the idea of you. And then the last movie I had never heard about until I saw headlines coming out of South by Southwest about this. And maybe tell me what you thought about this last one.
Yeah, so this is one Jacob, our beloved Jacob Hall, who I believe will be on the back half of this podcast. He put this on my radar just ahead of the festival. It is called Grand Theft Hamlet. And it is an early front runner for my favorite movie of the year. It is a documentary. It is filmed entirely in Grand Theft Auto Online. And when I say entirely, I mean entirely. There's not a shred of footage until the credits that is not in Grand Theft Auto Online. And it is about a couple of out-of-work actors during the pandemic staging a production of Shakespeare's Hamlet in Grand Theft Auto Online. It is awesome. It's one of those ones where it really is better to go into it armed with just the basic premise. But I mean, documentaries are, documentaries, I feel a lot of times they sort of run into okay, it's archival footage, it's talking heads, it's it's maybe a subject matter you care about, but documentaries don't often rise to the level of cinema, right? Do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to denigrate it. I love documentaries, but
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
This is different. This rises to the level of a form of very legitimate cinema that transcends what a documentary typically is. And it's just, I've seen a pretty fair amount of movies in my day. I can confidently say you've never seen anything like this before. There's no way. There's nothing that exists that mirrors what this is.
So I want to interrupt you just for a second, right? Because as you're describing this to me, it sounds a little bit like this movie that I saw at Sundance earlier this year that got picked up by Netflix. That's, I believe, going to be out on, you know, available on, to stream on Netflix, called Ebelin, which I don't know if you happen to catch any of the conversation about that movie or are aware of its existence, but it's basically a film about a guy who had a muscular, degenerative muscular disorder, who spent a lot of his time playing World of Warcraft. And then he dies at a very young age. And the documentary basically like recreates a lot of conversations that he had with his colleagues and friends inside World of Warcraft. So the idea that like a documentary goes into the realm of a video game and sort of, yeah, like transcends what you would expect from the form and function of a typical documentary kind of thing. Sounds a little bit like what's going on here. Have you heard anything about Ebelin?
Oh, no, I haven't. But that is interesting that like you almost have like a weird dual film thing going on there, because that does sound at least like in a similar realm.
Yeah, I wonder if Netflix would go after Grand Theft Hamlet.
Grand Theft Hamlet, it already grabbed, I forgot, it's a smaller distributor, but it's already secured worldwide distribution. So I forgot who's putting it out. But so it seems like it will be out later this year, because I think the response out of the fest was so like effusively positive that they're going to probably want it out there. But my main thing here is to put this on your radar. Because I think sometimes in the way things are now, you'll have something come out with just a premise that is meant to sort of grab eyeballs, like sort of like the Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey thing, right? Where it's like, okay, this is enough to get people's attention, because you just have to find a way to get people's attention. Mm-hmm. And like Grand Theft Hamlet, like that whole Hamlet in Grand Theft Auto is a good hook. But I'm here to tell you that it's not just a good hook. It's a genuinely great movie. So like if that hook gets you at all, like even if you don't necessarily care about Grand Theft Auto and or Shakespeare, it is so good. And I'm also a big, the last thing I'll say is that I was not a big fan of like the pandemic movie thing. Like Michael Bay made that one, produced that one movie and whatever. I don't need to see movies about the pandemic. Like I don't know. Like I'm not in that really. This is the best pandemic movie I've seen by a country mile. So like this one sort of rises above that sort of, and I think it's worth, you know, setting it against that backdrop, because it sort of needs to be. But yeah, so that's the only other thing I'll say, is that it really rises to that level for me. So it's, please put this one on your radar.
Okay, Grand Theft Hamlet is the name of the movie. Real quick before I let you go, Ryan, any other highlights from the fest, whether it's a movie that you saw or just an experience that you had or a panel that you attended or anything that you wanted to shout out real quick as just being like a personal favorite moment from 2024?
Yeah, so I didn't get to write about it yet, and a lot of it is because it's one of those ones that it's really difficult to write about until it gets a little closer. But it is coming to Shudder later this year. So if you're a horror film, please keep a lookout for Oddity. It is scary as hell, and it is funny as hell in like a very dark way. Oddity is going to get talked about. So, make sure to put that on your radar, because again, I can't really talk about it much like until, but there is some real nightmare fuel in that movie. A lot of us are going to be talking about later this year.
Okay. So, that's an excellent tease. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that.
So, but that's about it, man. That's what I got for you.
Cool. All right. Well, let's take a break and then we'll come back with Jacob to round out the rest of today's episode.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am now joined by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall. Jacob, how's it going?
Going all right. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing very well. Are you, you're with us, you're alive. I'm glad to hear it. South by Southwest didn't fully break your spirit or anything. How would you characterize your experience at this year's festival compared to years past?
It's always a good fest. It's always well programmed. It's just utterly massive. Southwest is, you know, a film festival, but it's also a technology and business conference, and also a music festival, and also just an excuse for lots of people to invade Austin for all kinds of reasons. So it's always solid. Like, I there's never been a year where I've attended Southwest Southwest where I felt, man, the programming was bad. But it's always just exhausting. There's no way to cover that festival or attend the festival without braving a lot of lines, without having to, like, really plan your days, especially if you need to cover the major titles. Like, my beat this year was doing all the major big premieres, so I wasn't able to, like, pick one easy location and settle down there. It was very much like I was pretty wiped out by the end of it. But yeah. I'm here, and, like, my recommendation is if you do attend Southwest Southwest, unless there's a major world premiere that you feel like, man, I've got to see that early. If it opens in a few weeks or a few months, I'd recommend, like, looking for the smaller stuff. That's how you have fun at Southwest, is by avoiding the world premieres. But unfortunately, duty calls for my career.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so let's talk about some of that. Tell me about Alex Garland's Civil War in a non-spoilery way. This movie comes out pretty soon, like within a month, I think. But it premiered at South By. So what'd you think about it?
I liked Civil War a lot. I wasn't 100% sold on it until the home stretch, or I think it kind of clicked for me. It's not the movie I think people expect it to be. It is not a film with a very specific pointed political POV, which I thought people thought it was going to be about. It is very much a film set in a near future United States where there's a civil war happening. There's a three faction war going on between the United States government and two secessionist factions. And the movie has this interesting POV where it kind of assumes you know the whole story. It acts like this is a historical film, like somebody making a movie about World War II or the Vietnam War, and assumes that you bringing in your knowledge. So it never pauses to explain, here's why this is happening, or here's what this faction wants. It assumes you know all that. And at some point, it has big moments happen where you assume that in this fictional world where this is based on reality, you're watching a film that's recreating moments that everybody knows from every textbook on Earth. So It has this, I don't want to say apolitical, because the very nature of this film is going to inspire conversations, but it really puts you in the POV of the journalists who are the center of the film. They're doing this, going on essentially this road trip across the East Coast to get to Washington, D.C. In the final days of the conflict to try to snag one big story. And it really kind of puts you in that journalistic mindset of, once you're on the ground in the combat zone and things are dangerous, nobody discusses why this started, and nobody just talks about, you know, I believe this, I'm fighting for this. It's just people dying horribly and trying to survive. You know, they navigate refugee camps. They, you know, find themselves embedded on both sides of the conflict. It's really interesting to watch the characters, these journalists, you know, have to remain completely impartial no matter which side they're encountering. And it's really interesting stuff. And I think that anybody who tries to pin down a specific political, like, mindset to it is probably going to fail, because I think Alex Garland is very wily with how he constructs this, because he wants this to be a movie about how, not about how here's what started a fight, but more about, hey, if we don't get our act together, this level of violence and terror is what happens. Mm-hmm. So it's less about why it happened and more about why we should avoid it happening.
Okay.
Without spoiling anything, all I'll say is that the final chunk of the film is true, like, Saving Private Ryan style, embedded in a war zone, in a gigantic battle, and it is among one of the most upsetting and, like, intense war sequences I've seen in a movie. And like I said, it really generally feels like you're watching a film from an alternate universe that were, like, 10 years after the war is over, somebody made the film about the event. And you kind of feel like you're watching something monumental that didn't actually happen, but happened somewhere else, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really interesting. If you like Alex Garland films, his obsession with transformed environments continues. I mean, like, all his movies are about how environments, both man-made and natural, become transformed or corrupted. And this film, like, leans heavily on that. Like, the first two-thirds of the film, the road trip segments are very much vignettes through various parts of, you know, America where very ordinary things have been tweaked or corrupted by the conflict. And so, yeah, if you're an Alex Garland fan, I think you'll find a lot to treasure. I'm off social media, so I get how people have been a little mixed on this movie, but I've ended up really, really liking it. It took me a little while for it to click. Like I said, I think the road trip stuff is good, but the final act is great. And by that point, I was on board. So Civil War, good movie.
Okay, yeah, man, I'm excited about that. And it sounds like Garland and his collaborators took the more interesting filmmaking choice instead of turning it into some sort of diatribe or something like that. Just like the impartiality of what you're talking about just makes it sound so much more interesting than even the trailer makes it out to be. You know, the trailer, I think, just kind of gives you that like pit in your, in the, you know, that sort of, what is it, like the stone in the pit of your stomach kind of feeling, right? Like where it's just like, oh God, am I going to enjoy watching this? But at least it sounds like he's doing something, yeah, really fascinating with the concept. So
yeah, I think anybody who wants a film to spell out its intentions or be very cleanly black and white, good and evil, is going to have a bad time with Civil War. It's a movie that somebody on our work Slack described it as the film that will finally break film Twitter. And I think that's a very, very potentially accurate description of it.
Okay, well, hopefully this next movie might unite all of us in the fact that it sounds like just a hell of a good time at the movies, and that is The Fall Guy, the new stunt-centric action comedy romance thing starring Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, I hate to be basic, but this is my favorite film of Self By. I had an incredible time with The Fall Guy, and I have a hard time imagining somebody watching this and not at least enjoying themselves. I think that most people will either have a great time or a good time. I kind of genuinely feel if you watch the movie and walk away being completely unmoved by it, I'm going to call you a curmudgeon a bit. I see this as somebody who's hit and miss on director David Leitch. I really like Atomic Blonde. Do not care for Hobbs and Shaw or Bullet Train. But this seems like the movie that has really ignited like his passions. I mean, he was a stunt performer and stunt coordinator before he became a director, you know, co-directing the first John Wick before splitting off to his own career. And this movie is just a big action movie, rom-com hybrid. Ryan Gosling is a stunt performer working on the big debut feature from his ex-girlfriend, Emily Blunt. And there's some awesome romantic tension that turns into big action because Ryan Gosling's character is recruited to investigate the disappearance of the film's leading man, which leads to all kinds of shenanigans and investigation. I mean, what this movie really is that the tone of it is what if The Nice Guys, the Shane Black movie, was a big bombastic rom-com. Is kind of like the tone of the investigation stuff. And Ryan Gosling's operating in a very similar mode to that movie. He's very, very funny here. And I know in the Q&A, or in the intro, I mean, to the film, David Leitch and Ryan Gosling spoke about how they want to make a movie where every single scene they would sit down and say, okay, how do we make the audience happy here? How do we please the audience in this scene? And that could have been cloying or annoying, but it just means that every single moment of this film, every single scene has something that made me happy and excited to be in that theater. I mean, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are just magnetic. It's this incredible pairing. They balance off each other so well. The rom-com stuff is truly wonderful. The filmmaking comedy stuff, like the stuff on the set, is really entertaining. The fact that they're making this big bombastic science fiction movie allows for all kinds of really funny sight gags while they're, you know, in between all the plot stuff. The action stuff is really good. I mean, there's some stuff you can see the digital trickery involving. Like for a movie that's about stunt people, there's a lot of stunts. And if you doubt this, the movie does have like a montage over the end credits of like all the behind the scenes making of the stunts. So you see how much it was practical. But you can still see the occasional digital hiccup here and there as they composited something. But largely the action is really good and really entertaining and really well staged and pays some really awesome payoffs with the action. Sometimes it does that thing where the rom-com will set up the joke and then the action film will pay it off and vice versa. Like the two genres are in conversation with each other in a really, really fun way. And just when you think the movie cannot find more ways to make you happy, the best movie dog of 2024 pops up. Jean-Claude is an incredible movie dog. And I'm very, very excited for people to start meeting this animal because he is extremely entertaining.
Bring Jean-Claude to Oscars 2025. Let's get that going.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so speaking of action, tell me about Monkey Man, which is Dev Patel, I believe, his feature directorial debut. And he, I think, co-wrote this and stars in this. And this looks like, speaking of John Wick, I mean, it looks like a sort of gnarly hand-to-hand kind of action movie. Tell me about that.
I like Monkey Man. It's one of those films where it's such a backhand compliment. It's too ambitious for its own good. It has the tone, that first-time filmmaker tone of a filmmaker who seems convinced this will be the only time I make a movie. This is the one time I'll be behind the camera. I got to make sure I put everything in this film. And that means the film is like truly wild. It has more going on in it than you can, that I can possibly ramble off here without spoiling things. But it is a bit too much. I wish it had picked maybe half of its ideas and honed them a little bit instead of tried to do everything. But it doesn't mean it's a bad movie. And Dev Patel clearly can craft an action scene. He's very convincing as a young man seeking vengeance in India. The first half is stronger, second half, because to me the first half plays like, what if the Coen brothers made The Raid? It has that kind of level of gnarly, intense action. But the main character is not as good at seeking revenge as he possibly thinks he is. So it leads to all kinds of borderline slapstick chaos, punctuated by extreme violence. And once the action kicks off in the first half, it's wild. I love the first half. Second half slows down, takes a different tone. And some people may enjoy the action the back half more. It is a bit more a bit more traditional. But I really enjoy the madcap nature of the first half. And I wish that had kind of been the tone of the whole thing. But that's just me. Yeah, I'm looking forward to what people have to say about the many things that Patel has to wants you to listen to and learn about in this film. Sometimes that's as simple as that Patel wants you to appreciate him being a handsome dude who can F people up really badly in action scenes. But also this movie has a really strong social conscience. It's very much about the plight of the poor and in India. It's very much, if you've seen headlines, you know that India's political situation is fraught, and this film is very much about that. Anyway, I don't want to say too much more, because Monkey Man, half the fun is seeing what thing happens next. All I'll say is I think Dev Patel doesn't need to worry about not working again. I think that if I watched this movie and I was looking for a director for something else, I would have Dev Patel on my speed dial, because this is a movie that was put together on a smallish budget. There are shots in this film that are clearly taken on iPhone, stolen when they could, you know, without permits. It's shaggy in ways that work and ways that don't, but it's definitely the kind of movie that I think that you watch and you go, oh yeah, this guy knows what's up. So even though I'm not going to call Monkey Man a great movie, I'm going to call it one that has greatness in it. And I'm excited to see what other people have to say about it.
Okay, well, people will be able to see this one pretty soon. It comes out on April 5th, so stay tuned for that. And then the last thing that I wanted to ask you about, Jacob, is the Roadhouse remake. And I think, I'm not sure exactly what the schedule of the podcast this week is going to look like, but my plan is to try to do sort of like a deep dive conversation about this movie and like comparisons to the first film and stuff, because I just rewatched the first movie recently. So I don't know, I guess maybe just give me like a tease of your thoughts of Roadhouse, and I'll link to your full review in the show notes.
Okay. With the understanding that I have not seen the original Roadhouse, I intentionally decided not to watch it, though, so I can just give this one a fair shake. I think the new Roadhouse sucks.
Oh, no. Okay.
I think it's really sloppily made. The action is... it's weird because there's not much action, and the action that is there isn't very good. It's the old joke about, you know, the food here is terrible, but in such small portions. Jake Gyllenhaal is really intimidating in it. Like, he's really transformed himself, and he's really exciting and strange. And his performance is really, really funny and interesting. I mean, I don't know if this was how the character was in the original. Like, so maybe it's just held over or a new thing. I don't know. But the running joke in the movie is that he's an incredibly nice person who can beat the shit out of anybody. So this kind of movie where he beats up a bunch of guys, then drives into the ER himself personally. And then the movie peaks there, though, and the movie never gets better than that scene, which is in the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes of the movie. There's not much here. It keeps on like tipping his hand toward being about something. It keeps on bringing up ideas and concepts that like oh, this Roadhouse is slyly about this subject or slyly about that, but then just abandons it. And the cast is huge. There's like 10 to 15 supporting characters, and you keep waiting for the payoff, waiting for the stuff that's being planted in the early half of the movie to like the payoff in the back half, and it never does. It's just this bloated, sloppy mess. And I don't know what's up. Doug Liman's made some movies I love. Born Identity, Edge of Tomorrow. But that Doug Liman did not show up here. I don't know what this movie is. The only person who actively seems to be showing up is Jake Gyllenhaal. It's a huge disappointment.
Man, that is a bummer. I have to say, though, Jacob, you should watch the original movie, especially now that you've already sort of done your homework already and seen this new one, because the original Roadhouse is just super bizarre. Like, it is so strange that that was a film that was given a bunch of money by a major studio and people said, yes, go out and make this. So, I mean, it's worth watching just for like the bizarre nature of it. It really is. It feels like a one of one kind of movie. Like, there's nothing else that you can really compare it to because it's just so unique. But yeah, I'm so curious because of the unique nature of the first movie, how this one stacks up to it. And I'm sure I'll have to like watch it through that lens, you know, comparing the two the whole way. But yeah, it's fascinating that like even without the baggage or that history with that first film, this one just like straight up did not work for you. It sounds like, so I'm bummed to hear that, but yeah, the first movie is definitely like a cult film. I don't know if I would call it a great movie, but how does that work in 2024? I guess we're going to find out. The movie comes out, I believe, later this week. So yeah, stay tuned for hopefully a deeper dive conversation on that. Jacob, I'm going to ask you the same thing that I asked Ryan before I let you go. A movie screening, a panel, a Q&A, an interaction that you had. Give me one thing that you haven't mentioned yet that I guess would be like one of your favorite memories from South by Southwest 2024.
The movie itself is only okay, but Kyle Mooney's directorial debut, Y2K, it's set on December 31st, 1999, and is completely historically inaccurate, and I'll leave it at that. The joke is that Y2K does not go the way it did in reality, and things go to a pretty extreme area. But the first 20, 30 minutes of the movie where it's, you know, really just the two main characters, these two teenage friends hanging out in 1999, featured, you could tell the crowd in the theater, was largely millennials and slightly older because things like, AOL Instant Messenger getting massive pops and cheers and certain, needle drops getting like people like screaming and cheering at, I don't know how the movie's going to play at home, but in a room full of people in their 30s, or at least it felt that way, it was incredibly exciting to see like, everybody doing the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing meme, all the 1999 stuff. And it made me happy. The movie itself is only okay, but being in the crowd for those moments was really exciting.
Okay, so that's Y2K. I'm not sure if that one has distribution yet.
A24 has it.
Oh, excellent. Okay, cool. So I think that one probably will be coming out this year then, if they already have distribution. So
yeah, there's no release date yet, but it definitely sounds like this year.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, thanks, Jacob. I appreciate that. So yeah, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more from South by Southwest, including a lot of panel coverage and breakouts from Q&As and all sorts of stuff, in addition to all those reviews at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Don't forget to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget also to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.